This is the EWN Radio Network.
This is Close Up with Phyllis Smith.
Yes, and welcome, welcome. Yes, I am Phyllis Smith. Welcome to Close Up. I'm excited about today's show. You know, I've titled this Invest Like a Girl, and you will find out why. Research shows that women control the purse strings, right? According to the Family Wealth Advisors Council, 95% of women will be the primary financial decision makers for their families at some point in their lives. Now, experts say that by 2030, women will control two-thirds of the wealth in the United States. Yet, only 30% of registered investment advisors are women, which has stayed steady for the last decade. So why is this important to you and me? Well, whether you like it or not, folks, when it comes to your money, men and women invest differently. And depending on how you want to end up in your retirement years or before your retirement years, gender could play a big role in your financial future. So joining me today are two experts on the subject. Meredith Jones, she's an alternative investment consultant, researcher, and author of Women of the Street, Why Female Money Managers Generate Higher Returns, and How You Can Too. So I first want to welcome Meredith Jones. Hi, Meredith.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
And Mona Lisa Como, founder and CEO of Interpares Capital and nationally recognized leader in commercial finance, and she's a former Wall Street executive. And I have to include mother of five and one of our EWN Radio Network hosts of Power Lunch, which airs live on Fridays at 12 noon Eastern. Hey, Mona Lisa, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Phyllis. Thanks for having me on your show.
So, Meredith, you've spent about the last 15 years researching and analyzing hedge funds and industry trends. You served as director of Rothstein Katz Institute, which is an alternative investment think tank, where you created the first Women in Alternative Investments hedge fund index to measure performance of female hedge funds and private equity managers. And this also resulted in your recent book, Women of the Street. So as I mentioned earlier, there's a dearth of women at the helm of the financial industry. Why is that?
Well, and what's interesting is that you actually gave the best statistic for women in the financial industry. 30% of registered investment advisors are women, but if you look at other segments of the financial industry, the numbers are actually much lower than that. The money managers on Wall Street, only about 5% of those are women. If you look at the hedge fund industry, there's about an 80-to-1 ratio. And in fact, I did a blog posting recently that showed that for every one woman in hedge funds, there were 11 men named either John, James, William, or Robert. So, and in the private equity world, for every zero women, there are six men named John, James, William, or Robert at the head of a private equity firm. So 30% is perhaps being generous. You know, the numbers tend to be pretty low. And, you know, there's anyone can speculate on what the reasons for that may be. You know, you can talk about glass ceilings, you can talk about work-life balance, you can talk about any number of things. But ultimately, you know, at the end of the day, I think that part of the reason why there aren't more women involved in the financial industry is that there hasn't really been a recognition that women can contribute something different, something sustainable, a competitive edge, if you will, to the financial and investment management process, an edge that will produce increased returns, which is something that all of us could use right now. Americans are undersaved for retirement by about $14 trillion, so we should be thinking about how can we squeeze every drop of return out of any investment that we have. And then the other thing is that women can provide some valuable diversification within a portfolio. So like it or not, we can't escape behavior and how that impacts our investments, whether it's our own, whether it's our money managers, or even if we're investing in market tracking ETFs, we're still victims of macroeconomic behavior. And so having more women in the markets who do, in fact, approach investing and behave differently is a good thing. And I think now that this information is starting to disseminate through Wall Street, we'll start to see those very low percentages increase.
Well, speaking of Wall Street, Mona Lisa, you started your career on Wall Street. So how hard was it for you to get the respect you deserved from the men around you?
You know, I think it was, I came into the industry straight out of college, extra charging to pay for college in the early 90s, right before the internet tech bubble. So I was blessed in one way, in a couple of ways. I was blessed that my first company into Wall Street was the cutting edge firm in terms of taking away your brokers and being the innovator and disruptor for investors, and that was with E-Trade. And so, in essence, it was a blessing in disguise because I didn't know I was a woman working at that time, or in the early 90s. It was just trying to get respect as a Silicon Valley firm as a whole because I helped, I was part of the group early on. Where I started to feel like a woman in Wall Street and more respect and just opportunities became more of a struggle, and that continues to be a challenge today, less so, you know, because you've got folks like myself and Meredith on the call, but it still is a challenge in terms of statistics, is as you move yourself upwards in management. And where the challenge came in getting respect as a woman was, you know, it was great to have women in the rank and file to help kind of do the heavy lifting. It was very common to see women in the middle management. But as you started to move and progress from middle management to senior management to executive management, the drop off of women at those ranks was so precipitous that by the time even getting to the managing director levels and executive ranks, you know, I was like one of three at the time in many firms. And so that, I think, is something that Wall Street's doing a better job of because you see more women. But from a generational issue, the 90s, the 2000s, I mean, we're talking like Goldman Sachs still in the 90s still had a dress code where women had to wear stockings. I mean, that's unbelievable when you think about it in perspective. So the industry had to go through a change at the same time women were still fighting for recognition as being, you know, providers and being respected as well as, you know, taking maternity leave, for instance.
Meredith, do you find that from an investor standpoint that investors are reluctant to invest with women? Do you see any pushback from that?
You know, I think that the issue that we face is really something that I'll refer to as pattern recognition. So we tend to, in order to shorten our decision-making process, we tend to look for patterns that we recognize. And in investing, we look for patterns that we recognize as being historically successful. So when you think about the people that you have read about or whose names you recognize in the industry, you tend to think about male names, right? So that's going to be George Soros or Julian Robertson or Warren Buffett. You know, you very rarely hear names like Fran or Leah or Teresa or anything like that. And so I don't know that there's necessarily a conscious reluctance to invest with female managers, but I think that they are outside of the accepted pattern. So I actually challenged people recently to name a female investment professional on Twitter, and very few people were able to even come up with a name. And so until people start to get to a point where they recognize that investment results can come in packages that may not be wearing a suit and tie, you know, and may not be out on the golf course, and it may be someone who, you know, looks a little bit different than they might have seen in the Wall Street Journal, then I think we'll continue to see investments in women-run funds lagging. But that's one of the reasons why I wrote the book that I wrote. You know, it includes 11 interviews with very successful female managers across a range of investments, and part of the reason why I did that was to help start to break that very rigid pattern recognition that tends to equate investing with men.
Mona Lisa, did you receive pushback from investors when you were on Wall Street? Did people kind of look at you and say, I'll take the guy in the suit instead of the woman in the stockings?
Yeah, I think it was, you know, it was always the, in the beginning, and I would say that was more for generational, so late 90s, mid 2000s, you know, the woman in the room, if somebody needed coffee, everybody would kind of look at me as though that must be you. And so there was definitely, you know, I'm not the only woman that had to go out there and, you know, kindly make a joke about, you know, I'm not the coffee lady, you know, just to eat from a basic who's in the room kind of thing. Mm-hmm. As we've looked and on the financial services and the firms that I've worked with, the truth is there have not been a lot of women companies and women-led investments that have been in the ranks for a while. We're seeing the progression of that in the last several years, and it's been great, but the momentum has not really kicked off until the last several years. And so it's good to see that that has grown, but I was in a generation where it was very hard to see any investments for women-led companies to even come to the forefront for any of our large firms to invest in.
Okay, we're going to take a short break, but we come back. Who is the Witch of Wall Street and why should we care? And then later on after that, 7 reasons why women make better money managers. Coming up right after the short break.
Hi, this is Steve Kidd, the host of Thriving Entrepreneur. You can listen to us Tuesdays, noon Eastern on the EWN Radio Network. I want you to know you are uniquely brilliant, created for a purpose. The world needs you, and we want to help. Listen to me and my guest, Tuesdays, noon Eastern, 9 Pacific, on the EWN Radio Network as we help you learn how you can be a thriving entrepreneur.
You're listening to Close Up with Phyllis Smith.
And welcome back to Wall Street. Welcome back to Close Up. Yes, I'm Phyllis Smith, and joining me today are two magnificent, really intelligent women. Meredith Jones, she is the author of Women of the Street, Why Female Money Managers Generate Higher Returns, and How You Can Too. And along with her is my other guest is Mona Lisa Como, founder and CEO of Interparis Capital, and also an illustrious EWN Radio Network host of Power Lunch, which airs live on Fridays at 12 Eastern. So thank you again, ladies, for joining us. So we were basically been talking kind of in general about how it's tough. It's tough for women. There are not many women portfolio managers out there, women at the helm. Not a lot of women mentors, and so it's, you know, how Mona Lisa, how tough it was for you when you started in Wall Street to get the respect that you deserve. So since there are so few women portfolio managers, it is tough to find female mentors, or as we call it at eWomen Network, femtors. But one mentor, Meredith, that you mentioned in your book was known as the Witch of Wall Street. And here's this, you know, here's one mentor that I guess somebody that you had interviewed for your book that she, this woman saw as a mentor, but she died in 1916. So it's been a long time. I mean, if she's citing one mentor, female mentor, from way back when, almost, you know, a century ago. So who was she, the Witch of Wall Street? What was her philosophy about growing and projecting wealth? And you know, what can we do to get more women mentors in the financial industry?
I think that actually was one of the most poignant moments of the book writing process for me, was talking to this female portfolio manager and talking to her about who her mentors were. And she pulled a book off a shelf and she said, "This is my mentor." And I looked, and it was a book about Hetty Green, otherwise known as the Witch of Wall Street, who was an investor. Like you say, back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, she amassed a personal fortune that would be estimated at today's dollar value around $2 billion, so very successful investor. But it is quite sad, I think, like I said, very poignant that this portfolio manager faced with a complete lack of female mentorship where she was and how she was investing, had to turn to someone who had been dead so long that they had invested in Civil War bonds. You know, that's just not an ideal situation. And unfortunately, that's something that's pretty common. I started in the alternative investment industry in 1998, about 6 months before long-term capital blew up, and I didn't meet another woman who had a similar job to mine until 2007. So 9 years into my career when I met someone who thought like I did, looked like I did, and had a similar job. So, you know, lack of female mentors and role models is something that I think a lot of women in the industry feel pretty meaningfully. Now, Hetty Green had some interesting – I'm sorry. Hetty Green had some interesting tenets. One of them was she wanted to invest conservatively. She wanted to maintain substantial cash reserves, and she wanted to keep emotion out of her investing. And if you look at the woman that I interviewed, the female portfolio manager that I interviewed, that is very similar to her investment philosophy. And if you look at the 11 managers that I interviewed throughout the book, you can see aspects of Hetty Green's investing strategy in each of them. So, for example, on the private equity side, Raquel Palmer wants to keep substantial cash reserves in case something goes wrong with a company and they have to make an additional investment. All of the women that I interviewed to a person were very stringent about keeping emotion out of their investing. They didn't get they didn't fall in love with positions, and they also didn't get overexcited when the market may happen to impact an investment negatively, but the investment was still sound. They weren't selling into that bad market environment. And I wouldn't say necessarily that they invest conservatively, but I think that the willingness to take risk is there, but they're not going to be uncalculated risks. And so you can definitely see a little bit of Hetty Green in everybody in the book.
What about, so then how does that differ from, say, a typical male approach?
Well, it's, you know, one of the things that's pretty interesting, I think, is that even though people often say that women are more emotional, I'm sure that everybody on this show has heard that before at some point in their career. What it turns out to be is that a lot of the times men tend to react more outwardly emotionally when it comes to investing. So whereas if you look at a woman during the financial crisis, there was a study that looked at 2.7 million IRA accounts divided by gender, and women were less likely to sell at the bottom of the market between 2007 and 2009 than men. They were about 10% less likely to sell. And that really goes to the whole keep emotion out of the marketplace. Men are more prone to think that doing nothing is not an acceptable action and that they need to do something about what's going on. And so, like I said, they were much more likely to sell in that environment. And unfortunately, that did hurt returns. If you look at the difference in performance between those male-run and female-run IRAs, women actually outperformed by about 3 percentage points.
Wow. Mona Lisa, what are your thoughts on the gender gap in terms of investment approaches?
Yeah, we saw the similar things with independent advisors when we were training our staff. And one of the things that we found, first off, is that we didn't, as an industry, I think we're getting better, and larger firms are actually putting more women into sales positions to become more independent advisors. But we also noticed was the outcome of how they interacted with their clients. What we saw time and time again was that when a female sales advisor or RA would suggest an approach to a family, just, you know, say it's a husband and a wife, we saw that if it was the same approach that was delivered by a man, for whatever reason, the woman either had either emotional intelligence or the or had a way about her, but the clients, when they were predominantly male, generally were more prone to take a woman's advice And part of it we thought at the time was maybe it was ego-related because a man wouldn't sit across from another man and say, oh, yeah, you know, I know all these strategies. Don't worry about it. I got it covered. They asked more questions from the female advisor than they did of the male. That meant what we were seeing, and that was, again, anecdotally. The second thing that we saw was that, and there's statistics to back it up, is that majority of the time the women have, in the relationships of flipping over on the other side of the desk when it came to a couple, a woman in a relationship has a huge voting authority on whether they're going to make the investment decision. And so what we saw from a strategic standpoint, from a firm perspective in training sales associates to interact with financial advisors, is that the sales associates that ignored the woman in the relationship generally did not have better returns. And then secondly, the sales associates that were female, even though there were not many, had a higher return in getting their advice being taken than the male advisors. And we saw that predominantly from a generational shift. It was less successful as we're looking at the baby boomers, but definitively more in the Gen X and forward.
Wow. Meredith, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I think that, you know, when you look at the gender differences in terms of taking advice and asking questions, and you look at the registered investment advisor space in particular, you can see that there are very discernible differences in how men and women approach their relationship with their investment advisor. And I think a lot of that mirrors what Mona Lisa was saying. In fact, one of the bigger challenges, I was just speaking at an event for financial planners, and one of the questions I got from the audience is, how do I better deal with couples? So I think that there is definitely, you know, like I said, there is a growing recognition about the fact that women and men do approach investing differently. They do approach that investor and, you know, investment advisor relationship differently. And as a result, the industry is trying to do a better job of accommodating those different viewpoints and those different goals and those different needs.
And I would add to what Meredith is saying there, Phyllis, what we were also witnessing, and this is I don't know who came up with the statistic, but what we were operating on in many areas was that 85% of the time when a woman inherits wealth, whether it's through death or divorce, she fired her financial advisor. So whatever the advisor was at the time, and it was, you know, applying to the couple, they fired the woman would fire the advisor and then look for someone else. And that was within 18 months. And what we were struggling with, and many firms were struggling with, is why is there such a precipitous drop after a change of life event? And what we were seeing time and time again, anecdotally in our research, was that women don't appreciate, so say for instance, I'm wife, married for 25 years, husband's been predominantly the guy you've been talking to, then he passes away, you would come to me as a male advisor and say, you know, this is what Jack wanted, so don't worry about it, I have it taken care of. Well, you know, most women don't appreciate being talked to that way. And if the male advisor was not able to shift their approach and literally engage the relationship with the female client who inherited the wealth as an equal partner who may have her own intentions, again, we were seeing 85% of them within the first 18 months of a change of relationship fire the advisor. And so that's something that I think the industry, to what Meredith is saying, you have to approach couples in a different way that you did a generation ago. But more importantly, when women are inheriting wealth, you can't walk into a relationship saying, well, don't worry your pretty little head off. Your husband's already taking care of everything. Just let me take care of it. The women have been part of that relationship maybe quietly in the background, and once they inherit the wealth, they want to be actively involved.
And I think, too, part of the reason is that there has to be this understanding that women may have different goals and women may have different needs. So there's been some studies that show that women are more interested, for example, in socially responsible investing. And so if as an investment advisor you don't offer those capabilities, that could be a problem. Women are more likely to say that they've got to take care of a parent or a sibling. And so that has to be taken into consideration. And then, of course, women also live longer.
Right.
And so investing in a way that is going to maximize and stretch out their nest egg is really critical as well. So, you know, there's a lot of different both behavioral and really biological factors that come into play with the relationship with the investment advisor.
Do you think, Meredith, that women actually take less risks, or are they just more practical? From what you're saying, it sounds like that they might be more practical, but does risk play a factor in there too?
You know, you often hear that women are more risk adverse. Mona Lisa, I'm sure you probably heard that while you were on Wall Street as well.
Ad nauseum.
Exactly. And it is generally not a compliment. You know, I think in many ways it's designed to say, you know, well, you're probably not going to get me the really high returns I'm looking for, but, you know, you're not going to lose money either. And so it, in a way, it's a little dismissive. What the research actually shows is that it's not necessarily a risk aversion that women have. They have a very different probability weighting scale. So they do a better job of matching their expected results to their actual results. Mm. And they also tend to have a flatter probability weighting, which means that they don't necessarily overestimate, for example, the anticipated price that an investment may get to you. And so as a result, they are taking risk, but they are taking calculated risks. And so I think that's a really important thing to point out to people, is it's not that women are risk adverse, it's just that they approach risk differently. And, you know, again, over time, we've seen that you can actually generate those really, really high returns with women. In fact, the index that you mentioned at the top of the show, it showed a 6 percentage point increased return from women-run hedge funds versus the universe at large. So 6 percentage points is obviously something that's nothing to sneeze at. So obviously there has to be some risk that's being taken, otherwise you couldn't generate returns like that.
Mona Lisa, your company, Interpotters Capital, you basically offer financial services for entrepreneurs, for businesses. Do you find, does gender ever play a part in your decision to invest? I mean, you're loaning money, so you have to make a decision of whether that person, that business, is something you want to, you know, to do business with. Do you find that you make it's a different approach for you when it in terms of gender when it comes to loaning money?
What we've found, and there's statistics to back this up, is that first off, there's not, you know, we need to, as an industry, grow women entrepreneurship. So it's, you know, in the 20% range. And given how many women around the world start companies, the United States is significantly lacking in that. But for the women who start companies, at least in the generations that we're seeing in the past and the ones in currently, what we're finding is that, especially when it comes to capital raising, what there is a definitive differentiation between women and male CEOs is when a woman comes to us and asks for us for money, which is not often. That's number one. We on average, probably 10 to 15% of the time, we'll have a female-led company come and walk in the door. And that's not because they don't want the money, but women generally finance their company predominantly off of their own income and off of their own raising before they try to raise capital through lenders. The second thing that we see is when a woman does raise capital versus a male, what you always have to do as an executive is you have to pitch your business. And so you have to walk into a room and, you know, much like Shark Tank, but not so, you know, dramatic, is you have to be able to convince lenders or any private equity firm who's investing in your company that the money that they're investing in you is going to have a return and they're going to pay it back. What we see, unfortunately, and this is gender related, is that many women executives tend to play it safe. And I wouldn't say that they're risk averse as much as they don't want to overplay their hand. But when you're trying to raise money, if you downplay the opportunity on what you can return on an investment for a lender, it does create an issue versus a male, you know, we see this time and time again, a male CEO for a startup company will walk in and he'll, you know, this is the best thing since sliced bread. It's 10 times, you know, a return. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, they're willing to literally bet the house and sell their business with a little bit more confidence where we see a lot of our female CEOs. And so I don't know if that's generational and that the newer entrepreneurs that we see in the Gen X and in Gen Y is a different approach. They're coming in. The women are far more confident. There's less coaching that we have to do with them and say, hey, listen, you're going to get in front of an investor. You need to know your numbers. You need to know your data. And you need to convince them that if they're going to give you X amount of money, they're going to get it back. And so we do see that differentiation from a generational, and it is gender, but I do see that catching up with the Gen X and forward generations.
We need to take a break, but it's interesting you bring up the aspect of confidence because we're going to, and coming up after the break, seven reasons why women make better money managers, and confidence has something to do with that. So stand by, and we'll be right back after this short break.
Are you an entrepreneur, coach, or consultant who is tired of constantly searching for the next client? Are you ready to get your expertise out of your head, into the world, and packaged into a profitable online course that delivers a steady stream of your perfect ideal clients to your door and a steady, predictable source of revenue? Hi, this is Janine Blackwell, creator of Create Six Figure Courses Virtual Bootcamp. And I've created my own seven-figure courses, and I've walked hundreds of experts like you through the step-by-step of creating and launching a profitable online course. I'd like to invite you to a free online training I'm hosting for you called The 7 Steps to Creating and Launching Your Profitable Online Course. I'm going to show you exactly how to create your course, market your course, and automate delivery of it so you can get your course up and running fast and have it work for you 24/7. You can grab your spot for this free training at www.createmyonlinecourse.com. So join me at www.createmyonlinecourse.com.
This is the EWN Radio Network.
This is Close Up with your host, Phyllis Smith.
And welcome back to Close Up. I'm speaking with a couple of really fabulous, amazing ladies. Meredith Jones, she's written a book called Women of the Street, Why Female Money Managers Generate Higher Returns and How You Can Too. And Mona Lisa Como, she's founder, CEO of Interpatis Capital, and also the one of our EWN Radio Network hosts of the show called Power Lunch, which airs live on Fridays at 12 noon Eastern. So one of the things you were talking about before we went to break, Mona Lisa, you were talking about in your business, you loan money to businesses, to entrepreneurs, and that men tend to come in with all this confidence, and you even kind of coach the men and women in terms of, you know, saying that they're going to be meeting investors, potential investors, and, you know, you need to come in and tell them what you got and what your potential is. And women tend to sort of undersell, it sounds like, but men tend to come in with a lot of confidence. Well, what's so interesting is, according to your research, Meredith Jones, one of the seven reasons why women make better money managers is that they have less confidence. So can you explain that?
Well, first of all, I would say that it's not necessarily that they have less confidence. I would say that they have less overconfidence. I mean, everybody, in order to be successful at any endeavor, has to have a certain baseline of confidence in what they're doing and in their skill set. But where you really start to see a difference is that men have a tendency to be overconfident. And what does that mean in investing? It means that if you are extremely confident, overconfident in your skills and abilities and your research, then you are likely to believe that every idea that you have for an investment is a good one. So every time you think you should invest in a stock, buy a property, whatever, it's great. It's the perfect thing for that moment. And also, when you think that you should sell, then you are absolutely and utterly convinced that you should sell at that moment, right? So, you know, the market may be giving you signs and signals, but if you're overconfident, then you know that you're right and the market is probably wrong. Now, where this gets people into trouble is that people who are very overconfident tend to also overtrade because, again, they have all of these ideas and they're going to act on all of them or more of them than someone who is not overconfident. And as we all know, if you trade too often or if you overtrade, you can significantly erode returns. There was a study that I cite in the book that showed, in fact, that men, single men, trade 67% more than single women. So that is a significant difference. And what that translates into is there can be a percentage point or more per year differential in performance. And I know a percentage point doesn't sound like it's that much, but when you think about compounding over 10 years, that 1% can really add up. And again, you don't want to be having money fly out the door just because you're overconfident.
Mona Lisa?
I agree on the overconfidence because it, from an investor perspective, we see this also with companies, you know, whether it's private equity firms or lenders. When you're overconfident, then you don't also take advice well. And when a company is going to invest in you, if we can get the women from a, you know, from a confidence perspective, where we see that they undersell is not because they don't think they're capable, but we find that women generally want to, you know, undercommit and overperform. And so that's a general tendency, and we say that's great when you're building your business plan and you're building your strategy. But when it comes to convincing an investor that you can actually deliver on the return of investment that they're giving you, this is the time where it's okay to say what you mean in terms of what you think you can deliver in the end. Instead of undercommitting and over-deliver, we want you to discuss and have the confidence that you know you have in your head, you know that you're building towards in your business plan, you need to share that with the investors. And that's where we see a higher return on investors when they're funding our clients than when we stick with a, well, you know, we know that we only need this X amount of hundreds of thousands of dollars or a million. We think we can get to X, but we're confident in 3 years. When an investor wants to, you know, invest in you as a company, they want to know that that confidence is there and it's not hidden. So those are the times that women as CEOs and leading, you know, small businesses that they need to pull that out.
Another one of your 7 reasons why women make better money managers, Meredith Jones, differentiated approach to risk. Explain that.
Well, and I think that's what we talked about a little bit earlier in part, is that there is a very different approach to weighting probabilities. And so, again, women are going to be more prone to take educated guesses and educated risks and calculated risks as opposed to what I will call wild risks with their portfolio. And again, they are going to have an approach that over time creates a very different risk-reward ratio within the portfolio. And that comes from some of the other factors that are involved in this differentiated performance. For example, as we talked about just briefly, women do a very good job of separating out their emotions from their investing. And that has a number of benefits to it. One of the things is that women may be better equipped to maintain conviction in an investment. So that means that, again, let's say that you have made an investment in a company and the company has, you know, a great product and a great sales team and a growing market and all of the things that make that company very attractive, but then the market goes down. And as we all know, a rising tide lifts all ships, and mm-hmm. a lowering tide can often sink ships, all ships too. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes, whether you've got a good investment or not, it's difficult to discern when the market's going down because everything may be getting that same downward pressure. But women do a very good job of being able to step back and say, is this still a good investment? And is the price declining because of, you know, just market noise? or has something fundamentally changed with my investment and I need to actually sell it? So being able to separate those kinds of things out really has a very positive impact and a differentiated impact on performance as well.
I want to move on a little bit quicker here to get through all these seven reasons. Another thing you mentioned, better trading. Women have better trading behavior, but you did talked about that earlier, that they tend to not trade as often, which could be a downfall, as often as men, and which could be a downfall in terms of your returns. Another factor, a reason why women make better money managers, this is very interesting to me, Meredith, is hormonal factors. How, you know, the difference between estrogen and testosterone, how does that actually impact investment when it comes to between women and men?
I think it's inescapable to think that, you know, men and women are just different. I always give people the example of American Ninja Warrior, and I don't know how many of your listeners ever watch it, but on a Saturday afternoon I occasionally enjoy it. They have an obstacle called the warped wall. Many men make it up the warped wall, but I think only three women have ever made it up the warped wall. So it's inconceivable to me that there could be a biological difference that impacts us physically but doesn't impact us mentally. And so when you look at the research that's out there, the interplay, particularly of testosterone with investing, is fascinating. So there's something called the winner's effect. And you see it in males of any species. In the wild, for example, if you are looking at a buck and that buck is out spoiling for a fight, they get a rush of testosterone, they go have a fight. If they win that fight, they get another rush of testosterone. They are more likely to win the next fight, and they are more likely to pick another fight. And this continues, and they keep getting these bursts of testosterone, and they keep winning and winning and winning and winning until they finally get so tired they pick a fight with a bigger buck and they die. And you see the same thing in the markets where male traders will get this burst with higher testosterone in the morning, will be more likely to post gains that day, and this will continue until John Coates, who actually is a Cambridge University researcher, postulated that almost every significant market crash was precipitated by a young male trader who was at the end of a winning streak. And so you really do see an impact. And then when you add in something like cortisol, so when you put men and women under stress, the way that cortisol, the stress hormone, interacts with with each other, that also plays a role. So men under stress are more likely to take more risks, for example, to increase their risk-taking. And when the market is crashing around you, when you get stressed out, that's the absolute worst time sometimes for that to happen. So really, it's very fascinating. There's differences in brain structure that are subtle but powerful as well. And you know, I think it's an interesting thing to consider that biology does play such a strong role.
What about is estrogen then? I mean, how is the hormonal effect, the women's hormone, affect their decision making when it comes to investing?
Well, again, I think most of the research has been done because most of the subjects that have been available for research have been men. Again, only 5% of Wall Street, the people that are taking risk with capital on Wall Street are women. So, most of the testing has been done on testosterone levels and cortisol or on cortisol alone. And like I said, what you do tend to see is that the lower the testosterone levels, the less likely people are to have these reactions. And, of course, women have about 10% the testosterone of men. So I think that's why you tend to get some of that differentiated performance.
Moving on to seven reasons why women make better money managers, out-of-the-box thinking. Mona Lisa, you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I would say women, you know, like to ask directions and men don't. I mean, that's probably the easiest. What I, from an out-of-box thinking, women generally will look at, and that's not to say, because I don't want to generalize for all men across the board, women like to do pretty thorough research, and I think that's part of where our gender definitely benefits us as nesters and women who are naturally prone to have to take care of the home and the environment. We're not only thinking about today, we're always thinking about tomorrow. And again, that's a generalization, but when it comes to trading as well as money managers, for female money managers, they're going to present a solution that doesn't just think about what you need for today and tomorrow, but it's also your life situation. And are your children going to get married? And are they having kids? And did you want to invest something on the side so you can? And so that whole holistic approach, which you think you get with most money managers, but with women, I think they take it a step further in getting involved in how you want to live your day-to-day life as well.
Meredith, any thoughts on that?
Well, I think from an investing perspective, women tend to, as we mentioned, since they don't trade as often, they're really looking for longer-term investments. Mm-hmm. And so as a result, you know, some of the women that I interviewed in the book had held investments for 2, 5, 10, even in one case 15 years. And so it makes it very difficult to invest in trendy stocks or trendy trades. If you're planning on you know, a buy and hold mentality, that is just almost impossible. And so you tend to see women looking for investments that they understand, that they can buy and hold, that they think are good businesses or good investments for the long term. And really that influences a lot of what they look at. You know, there was an article last year that talked about how 15 of the largest hedge funds all had positions in the same stock at the same time, and it was AIG. And none of the women that I talked to at that time had similar positions. And so really, again, in terms of making sure that someone has a differentiated portfolio, that's one of the reasons why it's really good to have both men and women money managers, because you may be getting exposure to investments that you wouldn't otherwise get because of this different pattern of thinking.
And I think that's really important, very important note, is that you're not a male hater.
Not at all.
Actually, both men and women can really give you a well-rounded approach to your investment. And we got to take one last break here. And when we come back, we have two more of these reasons why women make better money managers. And one has to do with mistakes. Stand by.
I'm looking for a certain kind of woman, and I think you know her. She's an entrepreneur that is highly connected, successful, significant in her own industry, and considered the go-to woman in her community. She's received so much from so many women in business, she's ready to give back to others on their journey, lifting as she climbs. Hi, this is Sandra Yancey, and I'm the founder and CEO of eWomen Network. I'm looking to connect with the woman I've just described who lives in your community so that we might have a conversation about how eWomen Network's proven success system can provide her a platform to elevate her success and ability to support women in business. Our international community of managing directors are influencing the speed of success for women in business around the world. If that sounds like something that you want to be part of or know someone we should talk with, send an email to managingdirector@eWomenNetwork.com. That's managingdirector@eWomenNetwork.com. And let's start the conversation.
Welcome back to Close Up with Phyllis Smith.
And yes, thank you for joining us and being around here for this really interesting interview. I've learned a great deal about the gender gap between men and women in terms of investing, but also how important it is to have both men and women when it comes to managing your finances and in terms of choosing your investment advisor. But we have two more. We've just covered five of the seven reasons why women make better money managers. They're less overconfident. They have a differentiated approach to risk. They have better trading behavior. Hormonal factors, testosterone versus estrogen, but testosterone tends to work with your stress hormones and create this winning effect where men may take more risks than they should and end up kind of falling down in the end. Out of the box thinking. The last two, number one, the ability to admit mistakes. So, Meredith Jones, why is that important, and why is that one reason that would make a woman a better money manager if she's willing to admit her mistakes?
When you invest in anything, you have to be able to take a step back and always constantly evaluate your investment thesis. Is this still a good investment? And what you tend to see, unfortunately, with a lot of investors, and I've seen it both in men and in some women as well, is that people fall in love with what they've bought, or people fall in love with a fund that they own, or people fall in love with a stock that they've purchased. And they forget to take a step back and think to themselves, is this still a good investing idea? And what I tend to find is that for the women that I interviewed in this book and for women that I've talked to over the last 17 years in the industry, is that I've never heard a woman utter the words, well, it'll come back to me. You know, when things start to really become difficult in an investment, the women tend to take an approach that may be that they sell it and they can buy it again, but before they buy it again, they have to determine that they have to go back and do their research over and determine that it's still something good to invest in. And that forces them to take, like I said, that emotional step back that is so important so that you don't ride something all the way down to the bottom.
Mona Lisa?
Yeah, and I agree with Meredith, but I would also couple on to it with what she had mentioned earlier about not having too much overconfidence. Mm-hmm. And where this definitely plays from a confidence issue, if you overplay your confidence and you bet the house on it, it is far harder to go back on your word and say, you know what, that strategy wasn't right. We should have taken a less riskier approach. And when women come to the table saying, yeah, this could be an opportunity, this is something that we'll look into, let's not bet the house on it, you know, from a betting perspective, but we think it'll work, it's easier than to walk that back if it doesn't work out. So I do think that that also comes with the confidence benefit in what women bring to the table.
And that the seventh reason, Meredith Jones, that you say why women make better money managers is a more consistent execution of strategy. Explain that.
So women tend to do a very good job of what I'll call sticking to their knitting. So they tend to consistently execute on whatever it is, their investment goals, their risk-reward profile. You know, if they say that they're not looking at any stock that doesn't fit a particular set of criteria, then they're not going to look at stocks outside of that. You know, it's very interesting to me. You know, there's something in the hedge fund industry called a short seller. And short sellers bet that stocks are going to go lower. And that has been a very hard strategy to maintain over the last 5 years because we know that the stock market has generally risen. And I've already mentioned a rising tide lifts all ships. And so a lot of short sellers have had a very hard time continuing to believe in and execute their strategy of you know, betting that stocks are going to go down. Most of the successful short sellers in the world are women. And a lot of men actually, over the course of the last couple of years, have closed their shops that use this kind of strategy because they're tired of fighting the markets, where women are, again, very consistently executing their strategy. And there is a time for short sellers. Some would argue that it may be coming sooner than we think. And women are executing their strategy and waiting patiently for it. And as a result, you know, without having these kind of changes to their strategy, they're able to have a very disciplined approach, and, you know, the strategy comes into play exactly when it's supposed to come into play.
Now, so we got the seven reasons why women make better money managers. Again, you did say, Meredith and Mona Lisa, I assume you agree that it's really a well-rounded approach. In terms of investing, both men and women offer value But I do want to say that's so important. With so there are so few women, though, who are fund managers, but more and more there are mandates from the companies, from the government to invest with funds managed by women, minorities, veterans. It's a huge opportunity out there. Mona Lisa, what would your advice be? How would you get more women to run these firms, these funds? How do you get them to step up to the game?
Yeah, and this is a great question because it's something I'm fairly passionate about, and it literally goes down to the pipeline of even in our elementary schools. We have to do a better job of encouraging young girls that any careers in science, technology, engineering, electronics, or math is something, you know, with the finance world and business, is something that is attractive and has a career for them. What you generally see in the financial services, and you can see this in other industries, but you see this a lot in the STEM related, is as women are moving their careers forward, when you start to hit that sweet spot, generally happens to be around your mid-20s, I mean, your late 20s, early 30s, well, that also tends to be, unfortunately for us, a life-changing for many women, is that's usually when we're deciding when we're having our families, getting married. And so I think many firms are doing a better job, whether it's the Wall Street firms, whether it's technology firms, that they have better opportunities for women, and the laws are much more favorable. They were when I was growing up in the industry. My first child, I got a 2-week maternity leave. And so it's changed quite a bit where there are more opportunities for women to re-enter back into the workforce if they decide to have kids. But I think that is the challenge that we continue to have, is we have to start not only in the workforce that we have today, our pipeline needs to get bigger. And so women like myself and Meredith is doing a great job with the book and getting the message out there. The more that the next generation sees women like Meredith and shows like what we have on Weave Women Network, that it is common to see a woman run a money manager firm, I think that that is more key than trying to recruit. We have to make it known that it is that there are women that have found a way to be successful as money managers, and that what they're giving back to women who are managing their wealth is actually twofold. So I'm hoping that shows like what you're doing today, Phyllis, is going to continue to get that message out.
And we're running out of time. Meredith, I have one last question for you. So if I'm an investor, how do I know whether or not I should be investing with a woman, have a woman run my portfolio, manage my portfolio, or have a man?
Well, I think the answer is that you want to have both. You never want to flip from one side of the coin to the other, because the whole goal is to capture the returns that you may be missing, to mitigate bad behavior that you may have inherently, to amplify good behavior that you may have, and to really have, again, that diversified behavior so that you have different strategies and different approaches to investing at work at any given time. And so I would say to anyone who doesn't have a female portfolio manager, be it mutual fund, hedge fund, private equity, venture capital, real estate, RIA, to start to look for one so that you can really take advantage of that, because it's just too important these days to leave that money potentially on the table.
Very good. Ladies, thank you so much for your time. If you want to reach out to Meredith Jones, again, her book, Women of the Street, Why Female Money Managers Generate Higher Returns and How You Can Too, you can find her on her website at aboutmjones.com. And, of course, you can reach Mona Lisa Como. You can find out more about her and her show, Power Lunch, at EWNRadioNetwork.com. Thank you both for joining us today.